"Drinkable. That means I get to take your drink," Frankie said, snagging Marianne's glass. "You promised after last time." "I should have never made that agreement," Marianne sighed. "I blame the liquor. Still, you gotta admit he's good-looking."
"Oh, he's good-looking, but he clearly has some sort of deal, and I do not understand it."
"You could try to understand it, which would be a rare gesture from you," Marianne said. "Or, you know, try to understand him more than twice in a row, which would make it your longest relationship ever."
"Not all of us meet our future spouse in kindergarten," Frankie sassed her cousin.
"High school sweethearts aren't that uncommon," Marianne insisted.
"No, but magical unicorn husbands are," Frankie sighed, staring at Carl's arms, his short sleeves displaying his hard-earned muscles.
"Just look at him.
He's like the poster boy for biceps fetishists."
"That's a thing?" Margot asked.
But when Frankie opened her mouth to answer, she quickly added, "Never mind, I don't want to know." Marianne snorted.
"My point is that maybe someone who challenges you instead of shrinking away from that considerable willful streak of yours would be harder for you to just toss aside."
"I'll take your drink, Marianne. All of it."
"Do I need to remind you that you once kidnapped me to try to help patch things up with Carl? You can stand a little well-intentioned lecturing."
"It wasn't a kidnapping.
You put a bag over my head, tossed me on a boat, and took me to a party where you knew Carl would be hanging out. You're lucky I don't gift-wrap you with a big bow and leave you in one of the sheriff's holding cells, with a sign that says, 'Cuff me, please.'"
"Well, that's an upsetting visual of your life at home," Frankie drawled. Marianne was too busy staring speculatively across the room.
"Do you think he has professional handcuffs that he only uses at work, and then fun handcuffs? Ow!"
Frankie rubbed her hand from the sting of smacking Marianne's leg.
"No more speculating on handcuffs." "You're right. We should stop," Marianne said as Frankie sipped her tea. "Because he's walking over here right now."
Frankie spat her tea back into her glass, glaring as she wiped her sleeve across her mouth.
"You did that on purpose," Marianne grinned.
"Yep." Frankie glanced across the room to see Eric in his civvies, a pair of tight jeans and a worn gray V-neck T-shirt.
"I swear, if he asks to see our ID, I'm gonna punch him in the badge."
Frankie took a long draw from her drink.
"You'll find a way to work with him, Frankie. You always do,"
Marianne assured her, still rubbing her leg.
"I know we tease you, but I'm always impressed with how you do your job. I know my daddy would be proud of you."
"Thanks, Marianne," Frankie said, squeezing her hand. "That means a lot." Frankie ignored the way her knees went all gooey at the sight of Eric. She'd seen Landry Mitchell in his uniform and his civvies plenty of times and felt nary a twinge. Stupid, unreliable knees with bad taste in civic aesthetics. Maybe no uniform or civvies would be even better. Bad knees. Bad. In the end, she was so caught up in debating between uniform or no uniform, she didn't move, and Eric walked right up to her.
"Ms. McCready," he said.
"Sheriff,"
she said, trying to keep her expression as neutral as possible.
"This is, something,"
Eric said, his face twisted into an uncomfortable expression as he glanced around the room.
"We like it," Frankie said. "Have you met my cousins, Margot Carey and Marianne Dawson?"
Eric cleared his throat and reached out to shake their hands.
"Nice to meet you both."
"Charmed,"
Marianne drawled. "Ignore her. She's two peaches in," Margot told him, bemused.
"Not true. I'm one peach in, but after kids, your alcohol tolerance drops to undergrad levels." "It's really sad," Marianne said. "But no worries, Sheriff. Frankie here is our designated driver."
Eric frowned. Frankie doubted very much that made him feel better.
"Would you mind if I spoke to your cousin privately for a second?"
Eric asked.
"It's business related."
"Sure," Marianne said with a grin. "You two go find a quiet corner. Real private."
Margot snickered into her second possum egg.
"My revenge will be swift and terrible,"
Frankie whispered harshly at her as she rose from the booth.
"You'll have to catch me,"
Marianne shot back. Eric led Frankie out of the bar to the bench near the front door.
Why couldn't we stay in the nice warm bar, where there are witnesses? She asked.
I don't think it's professional or appropriate for us to discuss an official case in a bar.
Shows what you know. Sheriff Rainey did half of his paperwork here, she said, rubbing her arms against the relative chill.
And where is he now?
Eric asked. He cleared his throat.
So, I got an envelope on my desk this morning, despite the fact that my office was locked.
I can't help it that Janie also likes my mama's divinity candy,
Frankie said, all innocent anime eyes.
And that envelope happened to contain several documents, including a statement from the Corps of Engineers about the conditions at the dam on the day of Lynn Huffman's drowning, a report from the manufacturer of Lynn Huffman's boat about proper care of the engine and the consequences of operating the boat without appropriate maintenance, and a statement from a mechanic in Atlanta who somehow managed to inspect the Huffman's engine without my knowledge.
It was stored at my cousin's husband's tow yard, she supplied helpfully.
Of course it was.
He chuckled, scrubbing his hand across his face.
And that mechanic stated that the condition of the engine was consistent with failure due to poor maintenance. And there were notarized statements from Lynn Huffman's sons about his general reluctance to wear a life jacket despite not being a strong swimmer.
And? She prompted him.
And a toxicology report from the state police lab, showing that there were no drugs or alcohol or any suspicious substances, organic or otherwise, in Lynn Huffman's system on the day he died.
That's right, she said. And each of those outside expert sources concluded?
He took a deep breath and said,
that the boat's capsizing and subsequent drowning of one Lynn Huffman was most likely accidental, and not the result of foul play.
Frankie resisted the urge to do a little flourish and bow, but it was a near thing.
Did you bribe your friend at the state police lab to expedite the toxicology report just to prove me wrong?
He asked, his expression amused.
No, I bribed my friend at the state police lab to expedite the toxicology report because it was the right thing to do, she retorted.
He raised his eyebrows at her, and she added,
It was a slightly less than ethical thing to do to accomplish the right thing. Melody Huffman deserves to be able to take her husband's body home for burial.
He rolled his eyes toward the cloudless sky.
Okay, okay. Fine. I concede that this is most likely an accidental drowning. Thank you for devoting your due diligence to this investigation.
So Melody can take Lynn home?
He sighed.
She can take him home.
Thank you,
she said, pulling her iPhone out of her pocket. She pulled up the cloud folder containing the digital release forms for Lynn Huffman's body. He leaned closer to get a look at the screen, his chest touching her shoulder.
I've already filled out the paperwork. All you have to do is sign here with your fingertip, and the funeral home in Ohio will send a van tomorrow.
There's no reason to gloat,
he grumbled into her ear, scrawling his finger across the screen.
I'm not gloating, she said, turning toward him.
He was bent over her now, his body framed around hers, and it reminded her of that night when he had been much more enthusiastic about being that close to her. She raised an eyebrow as she peered up at him.
I'm just enjoying being right. A lot.
The barest hint of a smile quirked his lips, lips that were so close to hers now. She could just crane her neck the slightest bit and kiss him.
Is there a difference?
She nodded, and her nose nearly brushed his as he lowered his head.
It's negligible, but it's there.
He laughed, and she could feel his breath against her cheeks.
You are enjoying this just a little too much.
Finally, some sort of normal human interaction with this guy. Proof that he had a sense of humor and could engage with her in some civil manner. It was wildly unprofessional, but at least they were both sober this time.
Not nearly as much as I could.
His expression softened, and there he was, the man she'd spent the night with. His lips were a whisper away from hers. She could feel his breath against her mouth. His hands slid up her arms, pulling her just a bit closer. His upper lip ghosted across her lower lip, and she'd reached the point of tension where she was just about to melt against him. And then he pulled away from her, shutters closing behind his eyes and bleeding the emotion from his face. "I'm not doing this again," he told her, that stern quality returning to his voice. "And don't pull any more tricks with cases. Your habit of taking the easy way out could come back and bite us on the ass. There's a reason testing is backed up at the state police lab. There are a lot of cases out there that deserve attention just as much as Lynn Huffman. If you misuse friendships to push to the front of the line again, I'm going to call the lab supervisor and file a complaint against your friend." With that, he stepped away from her and walked toward his truck. Her mouth was still hanging open as he drove out of the parking lot. What just happened? Chapter 8. Frankie parked her van on the recently repaved drive of the Lewis residence. Marnette had convinced Vern to bulldoze his family's beautiful 80-year-old brick home in favor of this beige vinyl-sided McMansion. "This is just one more reason to dislike Marnette," Frankie thought, stepping out of the van. She'd intentionally dressed in one of her more conventional outfits, jeans, a plain black t-shirt, and her green utility jacket. She actually needed a light jacket, which was a sign that autumn was setting its teeth in and they were heading toward Georgian winter, which was a lot like Georgian autumn. Trying to be a little more understanding of Eric had been sort of effective in that he hadn't arrested her for attempted kissing of a law enforcement officer. So she'd decided to take her father's advice and try a more logical approach to the Jared problem. Jared's parents weren't entirely rational, but they did share a common goal with Frankie, keeping Jared out of trouble and away from McCready's. She had to try to use that to her advantage. She was relieved that Jared's SUV was not parked in the driveway, because if he was home, she wasn't sure she could get through the conversation she had planned civilly. Taking several deep breaths to steel her nerves, she rang the doorbell, which was a two-bar bell chime rendition of "Jesus Take the Wheel." Marnette's eyes were the size of saucers when she answered the door. Her face fell from the pleasant company expression to a deadpan frown.
"Oh, it's you."
"Yes, it's me. I'd like to speak to you and Vern if you have time."
"You couldn't have called ahead. Your mama has my phone number."
"I wasn't sure you'd pick up," Frankie said. Marnette pursed her lips as if Frankie had just dropped something gross on her doorstep.
"I guess you can come in."
"Thank you." Marnette had clearly used a Pinterest board labeled "French Provincial Designs Rejected by Reality Show Housewives" as her decorating guidebook. Everything, from ceiling to floor, was painted stone effect gray. Every single surface was covered in some rendition of an overblown flower. Frankie had never seen so many unnecessary carved pillars in her life. And cherubs. So many cherubs. No wonder Jared was lashing out. She'd been inside the house for 2 minutes and she was overcome with the urge to punch someone. Marnette led Frankie to an equally overdone living room, where the mounted TV was meant to be hidden behind a swinging portrait of two kissing cherubs. Vern lounged on a very uncomfortable-looking couch, watching professional bowling.
"What's going on?"
he asked, glaring at her.
"I was hoping to talk to you about Jared," Frankie said, noting that she had not been invited to sit. "I've already talked to your mama, and I'm going to tell you the same thing I told her. Leave my son alone," Marnette barked.
Vern sighed.
"We've told you, Frankie. Jared hasn't been out to your family's place for years."
"Yeah, you've told me that. The problem is it's not true. Someone has played several pranks at McCready's recently, and we're very lucky that no one got hurt. That person dumped over a cage full of bait crickets, setting them loose in the tackle shop. They put hot sauce in the ketchup bottles."
"I'm assuming you have proof that Jared did this?"
Vern sneered.
"Because I don't think I'd go around town saying things like that unless I had proof."
Frankie breathed deeply. You're right. I don't have any proof that Jared is doing these things, other than Jared taunting me about our difficulties after the fact, but my Jared wouldn't taunt you. He doesn't even like talking to you. Marnette sniffed. He's scared of you. Has been since he was little. If only, Frankie said. We've seen your son with our own eyes trying to break into the funeral home. But you don't have photos, Marnette said smugly. You don't have video. It's just your word against ours, and we're not that creepy family that plays with dead bodies. Who do you think people are gonna believe? Frankie took a deep breath while shaking her head. Telling Marnette that her parenting style was as useful as a glass hammer would only derail the conversation. More. Look, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Jared isn't causing any problems at MacReady's. Could you do me a personal favor and keep a closer eye on him for the next few weeks? Keep him closer to home? That way, when we have more difficulties, I can come to you and ask about it, and you can say, impossible, I was with Jared every single minute of that evening, and he never left the house. And that will narrow my search. Are you saying I don't know how to supervise my own child? Marnette demanded. I'm saying that if you would like to prove me wrong and make me look like a jackass, which I know would please you very much, keep Jared closely supervised over the next few weeks. Marnette slapped her hand down on her carefully antiqued coffee table. And I'm saying that I don't appreciate some childless weirdo telling me how to parent. If you breathe one word of these silly, stupid accusations to anybody, we're gonna sue you for defamation of character. Frankie thought of Peggy at the Rise and Shine and whether she would testify to the sort of character Jared was known for at the high school. Vern nodded, adding,
And it will be real hard for you to hold on to your job as coroner if you've got a lawsuit filed against you by the county manager. Your boss.
So you're telling me that there's nothing I can say to you that will persuade you to stop Jared's behavior? I'm telling you that there's nothing you could say that would convince me the sky is blue.
Marnette shot back. Well, she could honestly tell her father that she'd tried. If the Lewises weren't going to be reasonable, she didn't have to try to reason with them. Frankie smiled so sweetly it made her teeth hurt.
All right, then. I'll be going.
That's it?
Vern asked, frowning at her.
Yep, Frankie said, crossing her arms over her chest. If you're not going to listen, there's no point in me wasting my breath.
Oh, well, all right. You should go,
Vern told her.
Oh, I'm going. And don't go talking to Jared either, Marnette told her as she walked back toward the door. Marnette, when Jared eventually gets caught doing something awful that lands him in a cell with a roommate named Big Larry, I want you to remember something. People blame the mother for a reason.
Marnette's eyes narrowed.
Get out of my house.
Gladly, Frankie said, slamming the front door behind her. She yanked open the van door and slid behind the wheel. She'd tried. She'd tried to work with Jared's parents instead of against them. She'd tried to appeal to their common sense, their duty as parents, and they'd thrown it back in her face. So, anything that happened from here? It was on their heads. She put the van in gear and backed out of the driveway, speeding toward home.
Game on, Jared Lewis. Game on.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Peachy Flippin' Keen. Written by Molly Harper, performed by Amanda Ronconi. Executive producers Kristen Lang and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2018 by Molly Harper White. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.